George Cleaver owned a sausage factory. In fact, he owned several. They supplied him with a steady source of income, and he seemed to derive great satisfaction from managing them. It came as something of a shock to his wife, therefore, when he arrived home one afternoon and made an announcement.
I'm selling up.
Selling up?
Yes, my love.
But you can't. You're the sausage king of the north.
Thank you, my love. But sausage making doesn't thrill me the way it once did. And a rival firm has made me a very tempting offer.
Really?
Mrs. Cleaver looked at her husband steadily.
How tempting.
Mr. Cleaver poured her a stiff drink and told her.
Tell me that again. I thought you said...
I did, my love.
But just to be sure, he told her again anyway.
But George, that's a fortune.
I know. With that sort of money, we'll be set up for life.
But what on earth will we do with ourselves once we've got it all?
What we've always dreamed of, my love.
Mr. Cleaver grinned at her.
Enter society.
The Cleavers decided that society was best entered from London, so they sold their existing property and bought an elegant townhouse in Chelsea. They also acquired a French chef called Monsieur Estragon and a butler called Tibbs. And then, to announce their arrival, they held a dinner party.
Lord and Lady Dungeness.
How do, your lordship? Welcome to my humble abode.
Thank you, Cleaver.
How do you fancy a cocktail?
Mr. Cleaver had worried at first that some of his more notable neighbours would refuse his invitation. But Tibbs assured him that even the most distinguished people could rarely resist the prospect of a free meal.
The Honourable Orlando Spratt and his...
Say niece.
And his niece.
By the time Tibbs announced the last of his guests...
The Right Reverend Dr. Fitzherbert and Mrs. Fitzherbert.
Mr. Cleaver was glowing with satisfaction. This was, without doubt, going to be the best night of his life.
That was, without doubt, the worst night of my life.
I'm very sorry to hear it, sir.
The next morning, Mr. Cleaver summoned the butler to his study.
I simply can't understand it. The food was terrific and so was the service.
Thank you, sir.
But the whole thing was embarrassing. There was no spark, no life, no... well...
animation?
Precisely. Why did no one loosen up and let themselves go?
I'm sure I couldn't say, sir. Although...
Yes?
Forgive me, sir. It's not my place to comment.
Not your place? What the heck do you think I'm paying you for? Come on, Tibbs. Spit it out.
I hope you'll excuse my impertinence, sir, but I think I may be able to identify the source of the problem.
Go on.
Tibbs paused for a moment, then spoke the words that would come to haunt Mr. Cleaver for the rest of his life.
It was the wine, sir.
The wine?
Yes, sir. As you say, Monsieur Estragon provided superb food, but superb food should be accompanied by superb wine. And you served your guests a cheap and rather odious Spanish red.
And you think that's why they didn't relax?
I'm certain of it, sir.
Well, why didn't you say so before, you great Jesse? I'm not short of a bob or two, after all. The next time I hold a dinner party, I'll serve them the best wine in the world, if that's what they want.
Mr. Cleaver suddenly hesitated.
What is the best wine in the world, by the way?
Claret, sir. Ah. From the greatest chateau in Bordeaux. Lafitte, Latour, Aubryon, Margaux, Mouton Rothschild, and Cheval Blanc.
Oh.
And from only the greatest vintage years, which are, in my opinion, 1914, 1929, and 1945. Cheval Blanc was also magnificent in 1895 and 1921, and Aubryon in 1906.
By the lot.
I beg your pardon?
You heard me, Tibbs. Fill the cellar with them from top to bottom.
I can try, sir, but I should warn you, wines such as those are very rare and tend to be expensive.
I don't give a hoot how much they cost. Stop making excuses and get them.
This proved easier said than done. Tibbs telephoned every wine merchant he knew, but their response was always the same. Did they have any 1895s?
No.
Or 1914s?
No.
Well, how about some 21s?
No, no, no.
In the end, he managed to locate some 29s and some 45s. But their price was so astronomical that even he raised his eyebrows a fraction of an inch. Did he dare make so ruinous a purchase? Mr. Cleaver's instructions had been clear enough.
I'll take a dozen cases, please, or as many as you have.
Flipping heck, Tibbs, you weren't joking, were you?
As soon as he received the invoice from the wine merchant, Mr. Cleaver called in Tibbs to see him.
I know you said they'd be costly, but I hadn't expected this.
Regrettably, sir, quality invariably comes at a high price.
A high price is one thing, but this is extortion. I've half a mind to send them all back.
That, sir, is, of course, your prerogative. But it seems a pity. An appreciation of wine is, after all, generally thought of as a considerable social asset.
Is it?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cleaver suddenly sat up very straight in his chair.
All the best gentlemen know about wine.
The prospect of self-improvement banished all thoughts of money from Mr. Cleaver's mind. Instead, he set out to learn all he could about wine, and Tibbs was appointed his teacher.
The first thing you do is sniff the wine long and hard. That's it, sir. Put your nose right inside the glass. Now, if you would, describe to me the aroma.
Well, I don't know. It just smells like wine.
Concentrate on the bouquet, Mr. Cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
Are you quite sure that you can't perhaps detect a subtle hint of cherry blossom dappled by sunlight?
You know, Tibbs, now that you come to mention it, I do believe I can.
Excellent, sir. You clearly possess the nose of a born connoisseur.
Oh, thank you, Tibbs.
Try taking a mouthful.
Oh.
That's right. Open your lips slightly and suck in some air. Let it bubble through the wine. Roll it vigorously around your tongue, teasing your palate. And then... Mr. Cleaver!
What is it, Tibbs? What's the matter?
The wine, sir. You spat it into the waste paper basket.
Well, you're supposed to spit it out, aren't you? I've seen it in the movies.
At a tasting, yes, sir. But at a dinner party, never.
Tibbs reached for the decanter.
Shall we try again?
And poured another glass.
Did you know, my love, that although Chambertin is the best sort of Burgundy to have with game, Partridge demands a Pinot Noir?
I didn't know, George, and now that I do, I don't much care. I just want to go to sleep.
To the annoyance of his wife, Mr. Cleaver had taken to going to bed each night with a different book on wine.
When are you planning to turn off the light?
Any minute now, my love, but first, let me memorise the difference between a premier crew and a grand crew. Tibbs says that a man of taste and discrimination needs to know about such things.
Tibbs, you set altogether too much store by that man.
You've never much liked him, have you, my love?
Now you come to mention it, no. I find him rather snooty.
Well, of course he's snooty. Butlers are meant to be snooty. It goes with the territory. But it's entirely thanks to him that I've become such an expert.
Duh.
Mrs. Cleaver grunted and turned over in bed. She knew exactly what her husband had become, and it wasn't an expert. It was a crashing bore.
Ladies and gentlemen...
At the start of his next dinner party, Mr. Cleaver felt sufficiently emboldened to deliver a little lecture.
The wine we're having tonight is a Margaux 29. In my opinion, and that of other men of equal sophistication, it is the greatest vintage of the century. The bouquet is especially distinctive, carrying with it a delicate suggestion of cowslips. And notice also how the tiny trace of tannin gives the aftertaste a gloriously astringent quality.
He waited for his guests to offer an opinion, but none of them seemed inclined to comment.
Lord Dungeness?
In desperation, he tried attracting the attention of the snow-haired aristocrat sitting on his left.
I say, Lord Dungeness?
Yes, Cleaver?
What do you think of the wine?
The wine?
Lord Dungeness picked up his glass and took a little sip.
Very nice.
And without further ado, he put it back down again and carried on with the conversation he was having with the Honourable Orlando Spratt.
Very nice. Very nice. That's all he said about it all evening. Doesn't he know how much it cost?
Following the failure of his latest dinner party, Mr. Cleaver once again summoned Tibbs for an inquest.
What's wrong with him and the rest of those twerps? Don't they appreciate good wine?
I'm sure they would appreciate it, sir, if they could taste it. but unfortunately they cannot.
What the heck are you on about, Tibbs? What do you mean they can't taste it?
I believe, sir, that you instructed Monsieur Estragon to add liberal quantities of vinegar to the salad dressing.
So what if I did? I like vinegar.
Vinegar, sir, is the enemy of wine. Huh? It destroys the palate. The dressing should be made of pure olive oil and lemon juice. Nothing more.
Mr. Cleaver gaped at Tibbs with a mixture of anger and incredulity. Now that he was a man of culture and refinement, he no longer felt the need to defer to his butler's opinions.
Hogwash.
Very good, sir.
I'll say it again, Tibbs. You're talking hogwash. I've been having vinegar all my life and it hasn't damaged my palate one bit.
Has it not, sir?
Tibbs bowed and started backing out of the room.
Then you are indeed most fortunate.
Mr. Cleaver was so sure of himself that the next time he held a dinner party, he started mocking the butler in front of his guests.
Mr. Tibbs has been trying to tell me I can't taste my wine properly because I put vinegar in the salad dressing.
Has he indeed? Infernal cheek!
Oh, don't worry, Lord Dungeness. I put him in his place. I told him he was talking hogwash. Didn't I, Tibbs?
Yes, Mr. Cleaver.
The wine we've been drinking tonight tastes to me exactly like a Lafitte 45, and that's because it is a Lafitte 45.
Forgive me, sir.
Tibbs stood very still and erect by the sideboard, his face pale.
But the wine you've been drinking is not a Lafitte 45.
Oh, what the heck are you on about? Of course it is. Look, there are the empty bottles to prove it.
Mr. Cleaver's clarets, being old and full of sediment, were always poured into cut glass decanters by Tibbs before dinner. The empty bottles were then placed on the sideboard, as is the custom. There were currently two of them standing alongside each other for anyone to see.
The wine you are drinking, sir, is a cheap and rather odious Spanish red.
What? You're lying, Tibbs.
No, sir, I'm not lying. Oh. As a matter of fact, I've never served you anything but cheap Spanish red since I got here.
You mean, it
seemed to suit you very well.
Ignore him. The man's gone mad.
Yes.
Great wine should be treated with reverence. It's bad enough to destroy the palate with two or three cocktails before dinner, as you and your guests invariably do. But if you then slosh vinegar over your food into the bargain, you may as well be drinking dishwater.
10 outraged faces stared at him from around the dinner table. They were speechless.
This is the last of the 45s.
He reached out and touched one of the empty bottles lovingly with his fingers.
The 29s have already been finished, but they were glorious wines.
He smiled slightly.
Monsieur Estragon and I enjoyed them immensely.
And before another word could be spoken, Tibbs walked slowly from the room, crossed the hall, and went outside to join Monsieur Estragon, who was already loading their suitcases into the boot of the car they owned together.